This is Yaron Brook, guest speaking on Dr. Leonard Peikoff's podcast. I'm here to apply Ayn Rand's philosophy of objectivism to your real-life questions. Your real-life questions specifically to current events, including politics, economics, and foreign policy. My answers are posted every other week on Mondays. Leonard will continue to answer questions, but now only on alternate Mondays. You can listen to full episodes on iTunes or listen to single questions or full episodes at www.peikoff.com. If you have a question to ask me, simply go to peikoff.com/questions. So this is a question about healthcare costs and why they're rising. And is this a question of supply and demand, or is government involved here? What's going on with healthcare costs? Because they're clearly rising. Well, yeah, of course they're rising, but they're rising because of government. 51 cents of every dollar today in the United States spent on healthcare is spent by government. When government pours that quantity of money into the marketplace, it's going to generate an increase in costs. This happens in every market government enters, in every market where government becomes the buyer. When I go and buy stuff for myself, I shop. I check out the best value for the dollar. If I can only afford spending up to a certain amount on the product, then I won't buy expensive stuff. But when a government bureaucrat writes a check, he doesn't care. It's not his money. He doesn't select what treatment. For example, on Medicare, you can go, you can get the best surgery in the world, the best surgeon in the world, using the best tools in the world at the most expensive hospital in the world, and Medicare pays. Now, they're going to start rationing this because they can't keep doing this because costs go up and they can't afford it anymore. But up until now, they basically paid. They paid for whatever you wanted. And they pay. They don't shop. They don't figure out what the best deal is. They don't check to see whether you really needed the treatment or didn't need the treatment. And you have no incentive to shop. So there's what you would call an overconsumption of healthcare by individuals that is driving up costs because third parties are paying for it, primarily government. But also the way we've got insurance set up today is set to increase prices. Insurance companies are these third parties. They pay for all our healthcare costs, including our first few dollars. And you're not incentivized. You don't pay for it. It's usually through your employer. So if you're in bad health, your insurance doesn't go up. All you're interested is in spending as much money if you work, because it's not your money. It's the insurance company's money. What we need is a rational free market in healthcare in which you own the policy, not your employer, and in which the policy is primarily insurance. Insurance means catastrophic. It means for the one freaky events, the real bad stuff, where you have to go to the hospital. But just to go get a flu shot or to go get a checkup at your doctor, you shouldn't have insurance paying for that. You should be paying that out of cost, just like you pay for food bills and clothing bills and energy bills and so on. Insurance would be much, much cheaper, and it would be there if something really bad happened. Just like you don't buy insurance to cover every little scratch on your car, or I don't think it's rational to do so. You buy insurance for the real damaging stuff, when it's thousands of dollars, when it really has to go into the shop. You don't buy insurance for oil checks. You don't buy insurance for the mechanic just to look over your car and see if it's okay. But we do for healthcare. So what we need is a real free market. Now, there are other, you know, you could go on and on with this. When a new technology enters the healthcare field today, everybody has it immediately because Medicare will pay for it for everybody. In every other field, when a new technology comes in, the first adopters who are willing to pay a lot of money for it first adopt it. They test it out. If it works well, then it slowly starts spreading, and then you start getting economies of scale. Production costs go down. The technology evolves. It becomes better, and production costs go down even more. And by the time it reaches a mass audience, it's really cheap. That doesn't happen in healthcare, again, because of government, because government just says, oh, there's the latest CAT scan technology. Buy 100 of those, and let's use them everywhere. So while the quality, you could argue, of healthcare goes up, particularly for people on Medicare, the cost is out of control and we can't afford it, and the quality of healthcare is going to go down as a consequence. Ultimately, what we need is true free markets. Now, I'll give you one illustration of this, LASIK surgery. With LASIK is not covered by government, Medicare, and so on, or most insurance policies. It's an out-of-pocket cost. Guess what's happened to LASIK? Prices have gone down. You get discounts, and you can shop around. You can choose doctors based on price, based on quality, based on how many procedures they've done before. And people do shop around. It's huge competition. That's why you see advertising for it. Or plastic surgery. Plastic surgery is not covered by any of this. Prices go down. Technology is improving all the time in plastic surgery. Now they have fillers and Botox and all kinds of weird lifts and so on. And I don't keep track of this, but and prices are coming down and people shop. There are like dozens of doctors and you open up the newspaper and everybody's advertising and competing on quality, on price, on how experienced they are. That's what medicine should look like, right? And everything. It should be an open marketplace where people are truly competing. Prices would go down, quality would go up, real good technology, the adoption of which would accelerate because it wouldn't be dependent on the government adopting it. Here's a quick one. What word would you use to denote someone like Bernie Madoff that acts against his rational long-term self-interest to get money? So before I do that, I want to recommend an article that Don Watkins wrote for the American magazine. It's the American Enterprise Institute's online magazine. Just search Don Watkins, Bernie Madoff, American, and you'll find it. You should definitely all go read this article about Bernie Madoff and why he is not selfish. He is not self-interested. And profit does not apply to what he was doing, profit-seeking. What Bernie Madoff was self-destructive, whim-worshipping. He was stealing. He wasn't pursuing profit. He was pursuing theft. He wasn't pursuing his self-interest. He was actually pursuing his self-destruction. That's the words to use when referring to Bernie Madoff. So here's a foreign policy question. So the question asks, he says it's immoral to go into Syria because it's not in our self-interest. But what if there's a real Holocaust? What if there's a massive killing of people, you know, like the Holocaust? And how do you argue that you shouldn't do that? That you shouldn't intervene in order to save the people, shouldn't go to war in order to protect them? As I do. I do not believe the U.S. should intervene in order to save people from Holocaust or what happened in Rwanda or other places. I think you have to argue from the perspective of self-interest. It's not in your self-interest. Again, unless the people perpetrating this atrocity are going to do it to you or are targeting you. And one could make maybe that case with Hitler, but I don't think one could make that case in the case of Rwanda. It's not the ones indifferent to Holocausts. You know, it's horrible. It's horrific. Human life is incredibly valuable, and any violent loss like that of human life is atrocious and be condemned and morally condemned, the loudest of voices. But whether you want to risk your life for them is the question you have to ask. And anybody who's saying, oh, send the troops now to save them, well, are they volunteering? Because if they want to volunteer, then they could fly over there and do it themselves. Now, I assume that would be consistent with American, you know, foreign policy to stop Holocausts, which I think it would be, or at least the kind of Holocaust like the Nazis, but it wouldn't be consistent about sending other people's kids. You have no right to use their lives in that way to sacrifice for other people. If you want to go because you have a particular passion about a particular people or a particular cause, you volunteer, you go and fight. There's always opportunity. You go and join the Syrian Free Resistance Army right now, or ask your kid to do it, right? Everybody's so eager to send their neighbor's kids to go fight for a war that they think is noble. Well, let's see their kid go. You urge your kid to volunteer to go fight for the Free Syrian Army or for the partisans in Poland or for the British, during World War II. The American government has one job and one job only, and that is to protect the individual rights of Americans. That's it. It's very simple. Holocausts are awful. It doesn't mean you should sacrifice your life for it. Quite the contrary. Your life is yours. The fact that there are evil people out there does not mean you need to forfeit your life. Your job, your responsibility, your moral responsibility is to yourself, not to victims all over the world. I mean, it's sad that they're victims. It's horrible that they're victims, but it's not your moral responsibility to stop them. So in a free society, does the government need the people's consent before going to war with a dictator? No, it does need Congress to declare war, and Congress is the representative of the people. But again, the war needs to be a war of self-defense. It can't just be going to war willy-nilly whenever somebody wants. So while I think dictators have no sovereignty, Dictators have no rights. They have no right to their state. We could invade a dictator at will. We shouldn't, unless it was necessary to protection of the individual rights of Americans. And the reason is the lives and treasure of Americans. That's what I care about. That's what needs protecting from presidents who would just go to war for nothing. Another quick question. Should government buy nuclear weapons from private business? No. Government should build its own nuclear weapons. It should buy the components from private businesses. Private businesses should not be allowed to own nuclear weapons, and they should only be allowed to build weapons, military-grade weapons. They should only be allowed to build them under contract for the government, not for their own use. And in that sense, the government could buy the tank from one supplier and ammunition from another supplier so that one corporation doesn't have it all, because the question asks, what would stop the manufacturers from overthrowing the government? That they would never have enough weapons to challenge the government. Plus, why would they? Right? They're making money by selling stuff. Why would anybody want to overthrow the government if the government was a good government? If the government was a bad government, there are lots of reasons to overthrow it. So this is a question from somebody who's just suffered a catastrophic loss of the whole town being flooded. And my guess is this is Colorado. And the whole town was flooded, and nobody had flood insurance. Insurance companies did not provide flood insurance. Most people didn't know that. They were ignorant of that fact. And now they're advocating for government to bail them out. You know, they need stuff, and they've suffered a huge loss, and government should bail them out. And this is the mentality we've created in this country. Nobody thinks twice about looking at their insurance policy to check what's covered or what's not covered, because they figured the government's always going to be there to bail me out. Why worry? Be happy, right? The government is always there. That's what we've created by having, for the last 50 years, these government programs that bail people out after every natural catastrophe. Government has no role here. You buy insurance. You check what's covered. I believe that if there was no government policies about helping people out, then insurance policies would at least offer you all kinds of coverages for a price. You would have to pay steeply. Some people would choose not to have flood insurance. They would take the risk. When they got flooded, they would have to pay the price. Would you rely on charity? Yes. You say in the question, well, charity is for individuals. It's not for all towns. Why? I mean, the Red Cross was in New Orleans after Katrina, before FEMA was. There are large charitable institutions like the Red Cross that specialize in natural disasters and helping people. Can they help you build your house? No, they can't. You're going to have to suffer significant economic loss. That's reality. That's life. But the question asked is this. Why is your bad luck in this case a claim on me? You can come and ask me for help, but why is it a moral claim on me? Why is it a legal claim on me, which is what asking for the government help is? It's a legal claim on me. It means redistributing my wealth, my money to you. Now, we live in a country in which when the earthquake hits my house, I'm going to come to you for money. But that's wrong. You know, people should save. That's what we did before government intervened. People save for disaster, all kinds of disasters, losing your job, bad economic times, natural disasters, war, all kinds of stuff that hurt the country economically, people saved. And that's the answer. But we live in a culture where that is so foreign. Taking care of yourself is so foreign to the psyche of people. Somebody has to take care of them. What if there's no charity? Then you're going to have to maybe you'll have to move. Maybe you'll never rebuild the town. How many towns have never been rebuilt in history? Many, many, many. Maybe you'll never rebuild the town. It's sad. I'm not saying this is nice. It's sad. Maybe you'll have to move somewhere else. Maybe some people have to start life from scratch because their savings are gone, because everything is gone. But they should have saved. They should have saved. So nobody has a moral or legal claim on my life. The fact that somebody else is suffering might be sad, but does not place me in a position of servitude to them. I am not somebody's slave because they had bad luck. My life is mine to live. Their life is theirs to live. Take your life seriously. Plan for disaster, because every place in the country has some form of disaster that could happen. Plus, the economy could collapse and so on. Save money so that you can survive such a disaster without relying on the guilt or even the charity of other people.
If you want to know more about Ayn Rand's philosophy, I invite you to ask me a question. I can't answer them all, but I do read them all. Just write to leonard@peakoff.com. And if you haven't already done so, start by reading Ayn Rand's two most important novels, The Fountainhead and Atlas Shrugged. And I might add that it wouldn't hurt you to read my latest book, The Dim Hypothesis.